I think I was led to a message today which I think will help us to think about some of the things that we need to be doing. And of course, Joshua himself said he needed to be about his father's business. So today we want to talk about called to labor and serve, getting the work done in the master Joshua. I remember some time ago I watched an IMAX over in St. Louis, and the IMAX over there has kind of reclining seats and you can kind of relax and look at the screen above. It's not a typical IMAX where it's screens out in front. And they were going over the creation, and it was wonderful. They would start out with a small thing like a baseball, and then they would expand that 10 times and then go 10 times beyond that, 10 times beyond that, 10 times beyond that. You found yourself watching, like going backwards from the earth and seeing the galaxy, seeing the universe. And it was quite the sight to see. And it just goes to show just how small and minute we are. We are less than ants in Yahweh's sight, I do believe, but yet he has considered us and has a plan worked out for all of us. And it's something to strongly consider as we go through and think about some of the scriptures we'll be examining today. There was another DVD that I watched. Going back to the IMAX, it's interesting because they did a reverse. And you could see the galaxies turning. You could see these things rotating and things. And then they did the reverse and went back. And then they started going to the smallest minute things, you know, atoms, subatomic particles. And the same thing was going on with those as was out in the expanse of creation. So Yahweh's fingerprints are on creation. And, of course, we understand the preexistence of Joshua. He was as a craftsman. And Yahweh is as the draftsman. But we find that there are different things that help us to think about what we're doing and what we should be doing. There was a video I watched describing, I think the title was Privileged Planet. I think it's well worth getting if you can look it up and get that. But essentially, they brought out the idea that we are in such a position in this galaxy that we are given an open window to the rest of the universe. Do you think that was planned? I think it definitely was, because now the Hubble telescope is able to view and give us a magnification of what we have out there. But we're talking about a galaxy that is 100 billion stars, or 100 billion planetary bodies. We have, of course, the sun. And with the sun, speaking of that, it's huge. And it's at the right position. I mean, if it goes away a little bit farther, we would freeze. If it comes a little bit closer, we would burn up, essentially. And the Earth, size-wise, there's a million Earths that could fit in the sun. And the sun is about, you know, like 96 million miles away. It's about a million miles in width. It takes us about 8 minutes to see it, because actually we're seeing a delay, the time that the light takes to get here. But, you know, everything is set up in such a way, and it was done on a purposeful basis. And the reality is, it was done, I think, for us, for the first fruits, for mankind. And it's just remarkable when you consider these things. And, of course, Joshua preexisted, and he had a hand in these things. 1 Corinthians 15:58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast and movable, always abounding in the work of the Master, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Master. Notice it says abounding in the work, always abounding. Not being idle. It means we move ahead and we persevere and the labor, with the labor to make sure that the work which is continuing is done. Now there's a foundation that has been laid out, but we're continuing with the work just as Joshua is continuing with the work. And if he's abiding within us, we are going to continue doing those things which he did. And, you know, I think when we look in the New Testament, we see John the Baptist essentially telling what we're to be telling, or, you know, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is hand. These things are coming. And so we need to think deeply about these things. And, of course, going back, we find Abraham. Abram in Genesis 12, 1 through 3. Now Yahweh said to Abram, "Go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to the land which I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all the families of the earth will be blessed." You know, the last message that was presented, that I presented, was the Great Commission, speaking about going forth, making disciples, taught ones of the nations, helping people to understand what Yahweh's word is telling us to do. And it's not always we're going to, you know, get the door knocked down, people trying to come in and find out more, because essentially we are witnesses. We are witnessing to a world that is dying, and it is not necessarily to convert everyone, but we are to help those that come to us. We are to help those that start asking questions. We are to have some answers for them. And if we don't, we are to look into finding some answers for them. I think we find some parallels here. Abraham, you know, of course, his name was changed to Abraham. Was a bit like us. He was called out, told to go forward. And what was Abraham's response? "Huh, no thank you. I got idols here in Ur. I think I'd like to stick around." No, he went forth. He accepted Yahweh's calling, and I think we have accepted his calling as well, to go forward. Some of the things that are broken down here, we find it says, Yahweh says to him, "I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. The one who curses you, I will curse. All the families of the earth will be blessed." You know, in going through this, I think we can see at least three. I will bless you. Certainly, we are blessed. You shall be a blessing if we're living in Messiah and doing what is pleasing to him, living according to Yahweh's word, not stealing, not committing adultery, doing these type of things. We are a blessing to others. All the families of the earth will be blessed. And, of course, this message is going around the world to the people. And, you know, it's all in Yahweh's timing. But I think we're closer to this being accomplished than any other time. And, of course, we're not the only ones doing this. There are other groups, assemblies that have basic fundamentals of faith as we do and are striving to move forward the best they can. Should the following scripture be encouraging to us? Ecclesiastes 9:10. "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might, for there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you are going." You know, in looking at Ecclesiastes, that's a very depressing book, I find. It shows the reality of our situation. There's nothing new under the sun. It's toil, it's labor. But what are we really working for? What are we working towards? And what is the physical death that is being spoken of? Sheol, that's basically a Hebrew word for grave. That's a physical death. But there's also a physical or a spiritual death that we read of in Scripture, and that's something we want to avoid at all costs. We're all destined to die once. But that's all right, because it's like a sleep, we understand. You'll go to sleep, and then you'll wake up at a resurrection, hopefully the first resurrection. As Revelation 20 talks about, that's the best resurrection to be in. And that's the one we're striving for, by doing Yahweh's will, by having his spirit within us, working with us. Then we'll be able to overcome with his help. And we're encouraged to work. But what kind of work? Well, if it's a spiritual death that we're concerned about, then maybe it's the spiritual work we should be concerned about as well. And I think indeed we are. Matthew 6 and verse 3. But when you give to the poor, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. We should learn to do things automatically. And by practicing right versus what's wrong, by practicing Yahweh's word, we'll automatically be doing the things which are, you know, in pleasing to Him. I mean, we're given the physical word, black and white, but it was given from a spiritual realm. So we're to live accordingly, and of course we have the understanding that we're in the Melchizedek order, not in an older order of way of doing things, but that doesn't keep us from neglecting certain things that we find. Eating right, eating clean, living clean, but spiritually is very important. And to come before Yahweh on the day that He tells us to come before Him, even though it's a physical act, it's a spiritual life that we're living. So it's a lifestyle. It's not, you know, we're law keepers. Well, yeah, we are law keepers, but it's a positive thing. We're lawful, and we're obedient children, and that's what we're striving to be. And that's something that, you know, we need to be striving for. And we need to be laboring and doing what is right. And so what kind of charity is acceptable to Yahweh? What kind of giving is acceptable? What kind of serving? Well, selfless serving, serving of others, not self-seeking, I think is essentially what we're being shown here. And so we're doing those things which are we know are appropriate in the Master. Exodus 3 and verse 10, some are called out for a special purpose, but collectively we are called out together as a special people. Exodus 3 and verse 10, therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, of course speaking to Moses, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. Moses was called to serve. He was told to go forth and to lead Egypt out of bondage. Now, there is some resistance there. And I think sometimes there's some resistance with us. Well, do I really want to do that? You know, I feel like I'm being led this way, but oh, you know, that means I'm going to have to work hard at it. I'm going to have to do things that it's going to take me out of my comfort zone. But that's all right. I mean, we can trust Yahweh to help us. But, you know, we don't want to forsake Him or resist Him. We want to do what He leads us to do. And I think, you know, the more we find about Yahweh loving Israel, keeping Israel as the apple of His eye, working out a remnant, bringing Israel into the promised land, I mean, we see parallels. We understand that Yahweh's still working out something very big, yet He pleasures Himself in working with something small and then allowing that to grow. It's like with the mustard seed. You plant that and yet it grows to quite a bit of a, you know, sizable plant. I think about 6 feet high, if I'm not mistaken. But those were some of the things that were around at the time that Joshua chose to describe. You know, oh, this is going to be like the kingdom. It starts out small, but it's going to grow and it's going to be everlasting. So we can be assured that it's not going to be like Rome, which collapsed, though is still seemingly active in many ways. Of course, we have you know, a religious aspect of that we see. We also, I think, see a revived Roman Empire coming. But, you know, these are some of the things that we can consider. But as a parallel of this verse, Exodus 3:10, says, you know, bringing my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. I mean, this is Yahweh doing it. Of course, He's using Moses, but Moses is, you know, kind of typifying what, you know, symbolic of Yahweh, bringing the people out. And Yahweh's called us out. He's, again, I think, working with Israel for the most part. But any who will join Israel can join. Ask, knock, you know, the door will be open, these type of things. That's made clear. But we are leaving a symbolic Egypt. We are here out of Egypt. We are not partaking in Egypt's fun stuff. you know, the way of the world, these type of things. Not everything is bad. We were talking about technology and how technology is getting, and people can get all tied up in technology, and that becomes their life. That becomes their lifestyle. But we're to break free of being bound by anything that prevents us from coming and doing Yahweh's will. So we're a bit of an oddity. And the world just kind of shakes its head at us when it understands what we're doing. But it doesn't really understand what we're doing, does it? It kind of is mystified. And so we try to describe the mystery to them, but unless Yahweh is opening up their minds to understand, they will not. Genesis 45 and verse 7. Elohim sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Of course, this is speaking of Joseph. And Joseph was one of the brothers of who? Well, the other brothers make up the 12 tribes of Israel. It stems from Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel. So you can see Yahweh working with Israel, you know, in various areas back here. Is it any stretch of the imagination that he's still working with Israel even today, even though Israel may not know who they are? I think part of the commission that we're given, of course, is to help them understand who they are and what Yahweh wants of them. And, of course, we've been teaching for some time now about Israel and who Israel is, really. Of course, Israel in itself, the word means, you know, it can mean Prince of El, can also mean overcoming with the help of El. And we need all the help that we need, or all the help that we can get, I should say. And so we move forward with that help. But Joseph was called to serve by providing for his family, Israel. 1 Chronicles 28:6-10. Speaking of David, he's speaking to David, but he's telling David essentially that he's not going to build the temple, physical temple. He said to me, "Your son Solomon is the one who shall build my house and my courts, for I have chosen him to be a son to me, and I will be a father to him. I will establish his kingdom forever if he resolutely performs my commandments and my ordinances." Has anything changed? Is this a conditional thing? It says, as is done now. So he, you know, Solomon was being obedient initially. "So now in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of Yahweh, and in the hearing of our Elohim, observe and seek all of all the commandments of Yahweh, your Elohim, so that you may possess the good land and bequeath it to your sons after you forever. As for you, my son Solomon, know the Elohim of your father and serve him with a whole heart and with a willing mind. For Yahweh searches all hearts and understands every intent of the hearts. If you seek him, he will let you find him." You know, the ask, seek, knock type principle. "But if you forsake him, he will reject you forever." That's not always mentioned, but we understand it's true. "Consider now, for Yahweh has chosen you to build a house for the sanctuary. Be courageous and act." That's a big job. Kind of like what Moses was given. Moses was... I'm having a hard time believing you'd want me, you know, and I'm not a very good speaker to go and get them out, you know. Well, Yahweh provided, gave him Aaron and staff and the help of Yahweh's Spirit. Solomon, of course, was given wisdom. He understood he was going to need help. And so he cried out to Yahweh and said, you know, this great people that you have, how am I going to help them? I need your help. And, you know, that was a very special time because Solomon didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for the things that typically the human nature would like. And because of that, Yahweh gave him all of that as well. But, you know, Solomon, though he's called to serve and build the temple, and I think, you know, we can relate this to ourselves as well. We are, you know, we're in the process, or Yahweh is in the process of building up a spiritual temple. And we're being fit in as stones, being fit into a building. And it's, the shaping of the stones is not always comfortable, and Yahweh puts us through things we would think that we would not need to go through. But he knows each and every one of us and knows what we need to go through. So we go through them. And not always, our human nature tends to get in the way. And I think Paul struggled with his human nature, and he readily admits the things I want to do, I don't do. Things I don't want to do, that is the very thing I do. And not that he was going around sinning and doing wrong, but he was actually just struggling within himself, that human flesh that he and that we all have to deal with. But going back to Solomon, Solomon, did Solomon forsake Yahweh? He was basically approached by Yahweh at least twice, and he was given instructions. And what did he do? The kings were not to multiply wives, not to multiply horses and these type of things, their armies. Of course, King David was disciplined because he started counting Israel. It was a prideful act. It was something that he wasn't to be doing. Because it's by not by power nor by might, but by my spirit, says Yahweh. So we understand it is his doing. It's his doing that we're even here. So we humbly submit to him, and we're not we're not getting too big-headed, because there's not a lot of people here, not a lot of people around, and I think that's part of the plan, because Yahweh understands our human nature and we do struggle, but he's keeping us humbled, and it's for our own good, because the humble are the ones that will be lifted up and brought into the coming kingdom, those that he will be able to work with. But going back to Solomon, Solomon built a temple for Yahweh, built the house for Yahweh. And then he built one for himself that was like twice as big. And he built houses for his heathen wives that he wasn't supposed to. Of course, being in the position that he was in, he wanted to make alliances with the others, and he had trade routes and all this. So he was thinking, he was using wisdom. But he's going against what Yahweh wanted him to do. And that's what we're not to do. That is, we're not to go against what Yahweh wants. He built, as I understand it, we can go through this in a Bible study, but essentially even allowed shrines to be built for his wives so they could offer to Molech and to these pagan idols and that type of worship. It was just an abomination in Yahweh's sight. And Solomon allowed it. So I think we are particular in what we allow here so as not to be like Solomon, or not to be like ancient Israel in many respects, which they became willing to do certain things that we are not to be doing. So I think we're more readily able to see when someone comes in and is not acting appropriately or not doing right in Yahweh's sight. Now it's true that we're all overcoming things, so we're helping people that come in trying to, but it takes time. But this is an ongoing thing. There's problems with the people. Going back to Hebrews chapter 8, a lot of people point to that, the old covenant, hard to do covenant. You couldn't do the things in the covenant. The problem was with the covenant. No, the problem was the people, as Hebrews chapter 8 brings out. Let's go over to Mark 9, verse 33-35. They came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he began to question them. "What were you discussing on the way?" This is Yahshua speaking to his disciples. But notice this, they kept silent, for on the way they had been discussing with one another which of them was the greatest. Can you believe it? Sitting down, he called the 12 and said to them, "If anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all and be servant of all." You know, I was thinking about the scripture and was looking in the context of it and such, and you know, I was remembering the James and John, sons of Zebedee, sons of thunder, sons of sons of unrest, I think, is what they refer to the wording there. The sons of thunder. The word thunder can mean unrest. But notice, you know, it says the greatest will be servant of all. It also says he shall be last of all. So in other words, don't try to get to the head of the pack. Don't try to, you know, push people out of the way to become something that you're not. We're all called to serve. We're all called to help and labor. And labor takes effort. Let's go over to Matthew 20, 25 through 28. Yahshua called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles are master over them, and their great men exercise over them. It is not this way among you." Now this is going back to the sons of Zebedee, James and John. And the mother came and said, "Hey, I want my sons to be on the right and left hand of, you know, Yahweh, because they're sons of thunder. They can do it." And Yahshua is basically explaining to them it's not going to be the case. It says, "It is not this way among you. Whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." So you can see kind of the attitudes that were going on among the disciples and some of the different things that were being dealt with there. I want to go back into Mark because I brought my Bible up here today just to be able to go back into some of the areas just to get clarification on the context. And Revelation or Mark 9, and let's back up to verse 30. Mark 9 30. We won't have it up on the screen, but from there they went out and began to go through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know about it, for he was teaching his disciples and telling them. So he's specifically dealing with the disciples. And he said, "The Son of Man is to be delivered in the hands of men, and they will kill him, and when he has been killed, he will rise 3 days." But they did not understand the statement, and they were afraid to ask him. See, you know, the human nature at work here. They didn't even want to let him know, and he knew all things. They didn't want to let him know that they were, you know, not really understanding what he was saying. So they had to be worked with, kind of like how Peter needed to be worked with, because his personality was such that he had difficulties. He was kind of gung-ho at times when maybe he shouldn't have been so gung-ho, and maybe a little bit reserved when he shouldn't have been so reserved. But we're dealing with our personalities even today that, you know, have these type of things in them, the flesh. But Yahshua, though great, came to humbly serve and set the example, you know, mentioning that the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. We ourselves may need to lay down our lives for the testimony that we hold, whether it's at the hands of others or, you know, at this government or, you know, whatever the case may be. I'm not saying that the government's going to come in and do anything, but hey, you never know. Times are getting kind of tense, and you know, it's kind of stressful out there. And we see wars and rumors of wars. We see some of the stuff that's going on around the world, and it's not all pretty. John 13, starting in verse 12 through 15 there. So when he had washed their feet, of course, this is just prior to the taking of the emblems, Passover, and Yahshua had actually taken up the towel and proceeded to wash their feet. So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments, reclined at the table again. Of course, there was a discussion between, because Peter was the first one, and Peter was like, "Oh, you should never wash my feet." And then, you know, the discussion went, "Well, you know, then you're not going to have any part with me." "Well, wash my whole body then." You know, Peter was very kind of flamboyant in many respects. But that's, you know, we're dealing with different things today. I myself am sometimes flamboyant. You know, I deal with my flesh. You deal with your flesh. That's just the way it is. But we're overcoming, we're growing, we're dealing with situations that help us to grow and be prepared for the coming kingdom. And we do hope to be prepared when Yahshua returns. But going on in John 13, let me just go ahead and start over here in verse 12 through 15. "So when he had washed their feet and taken his garment and reclined at the table again, he said to them, 'Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and master, and you are right, for I am. If I then, the master and teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should also do as I did to you.'" Self-denial is part of serving. He denied himself of his glory to be actually here on this earth and to submit to Yahweh's will. He didn't come to take rulership, but that rulership is being given to him. Why? Because he humbled himself to the point of death. And some of us may be called to do the same. But humbling oneself, willing to do the labor that was needed, that's what Yahshua did. He set the example for us, and he obeyed Yahweh. So why is it so hard for people to understand that we are also to obey Yahweh? And yet it is hard for people to understand because they're not necessarily being enlightened by Yahweh at this time. I mean, we try to explain and tell, and they still, "Yeah, but he knows my heart." Yeah, Yahweh knows the heart that's exceedingly wicked, and that the carnal mind is enmity against Yahweh. Yeah, he understands the heart and the mind of man. But when his spirit gets involved, it helps us to understand and helps us to submit to him and to his word. And I think there has to be a bit of an obedient heart and mind even before fully receiving of his spirit. Romans 15, 1 through 3. "Now we who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength." So since they were seeing troubles back at that time with some of the brethren, that we should also step up to the plate and help as we're able. It says, "And not just please ourselves. Each of us is to please his neighbor for his good, to his edification. For even Messiah did not please himself, for it is written, 'The approaches or reproaches of those who reproached you fell on me.'" And of course, this gets into areas that I think I understand a little bit better, and it's something that goes into some anti-Pauline teachings that are out there. One of the teachings, maybe I'll just give a little bit, but some of the teachings are that, well, Paul should have never said it was okay to eat meats that were sacrificed to idols. Okay, meat sacrificed to idols. Does eating meat, as long as it's clean, according to Yahweh's word, sacrificed to idols, does that really mean anything for us? Well, it's pointed out in the Old Testament, it says we're not to be, we're not to eat anything that's been sacrificed to idols. And I wonder if the situation wasn't such back then that there weren't meat markets that they were going out and selling the meat from the temple, sacrificing these to these pagan idols. But in Rome, they had these meat markets. And you didn't know whether or not an item was actually sacrifice to an idol or not, unless they told you. And then Paul does step up and essentially say, look, if for their conscience sake, don't do it. Don't give credence to what they're doing. But Paul's hard to understand, and it's interesting about Paul. Peter brought up the idea that Paul is hard to understand. Sometimes we're hard to understand. You're probably scratching your head today about some of the things I'm speaking to you about because, well, did he say what I think he said? Well, I'm trying to be as clear as possible, but and I think Paul was too. However, Peter made it clear that the lawless teachers, the lawless people, would use his writings to justify their unlawfulness. Interesting, because when you look at all the writings that are out there to prove that the law is not valid for us today, it's all Paul. The very thing that Peter warned us against. Anyway, not to get too far off base, I just was thinking about some of these things, and it was kind of interesting. But I think some of the anti-Pauline teachings out there are because they don't understand Paul's writings. Well, sometimes we don't understand Paul's writings either. But he did clarify himself. He was not against the law. He was not. In fact, he said the law is good, righteous, true, in Romans. But this particular area here was talking about sacrificing animals to idols and stuff. If you go back to the Old Testament, the idea that the only way you could have eaten sacrificed meat back at that time, if they didn't have the meat market, that means you were at the temple actually worshiping the pagan deity to have been able to have eaten the sacrifice. No wonder Yahweh said, don't eat the sacrifice of these, the animals that are, set before these pagan idols. I'm just saying, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's not quite the right answer for that particular item of scripture that's being brought up. But it's being used to try to prove Paul was wrong. Paul was a heretic. Paul didn't know what he was doing. But I think when you see him expressing the spirit and a way of life that we are to be living, he was spot on. And he knew exactly what he was talking about. But he struggled, and we struggle. And the thing to help that helps us is if we have a humble attitude towards one another. If we see someone we think may not be necessarily doing something that we feel is right, their faith maybe allows them to do something we may not think is right. So we're trying to work together and help one another, and we can discuss some of these things, but it can be problematic if we start, biting and tearing into one another, and we can devour one another. And I think that's one of the reasons we're told in Yahweh's word not to be a tale bearer among the people. And when you look at James, chapter 4, I think it's James chapter 4. We're not to be backbiting one another. James 4 and 11, do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. Okay. So we're trying the best we can to be amiable and to be respectful, but in our area of control, we do the best that we can that we believe is correct in Yahweh's sight. So I think it does put some of us at odds because some of us have some different beliefs that are going a little off. But we're to be respectful and we're of the same spirit, within the same body. Sometimes there's a little different understanding. But I think as we move forward, hopefully we'll be more and more on the same page. And these differences will clarify themselves as Yahweh works more and more with us. That's the hope. But we still have to do and seek Yahweh's will. So if we understand to do right and we don't do it, to us it is sin, as James points out. Okay, where was I? Going back, let's see, it was in Romans. Let's go on to Acts chapter 9 and verse 16. You know, was it Ananias that went and told Paul what he needed to do? Of course, Yahshua spoke to Paul. But Yahshua told the one he sent to Paul, you know, because he knew Paul was out to basically kill the brethren, the saints. And Yahshua said, look, I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. You know, because of what he's done, I'm going to help correct his character. I think is essentially what he, why he allowed Paul to go through the struggles and the trials and the troubles that he did. Because not all of us go through, you know, what did he go? He went through like three shipwrecks. What, you know? Now, things happen. There's no question about that. And it doesn't necessarily mean that we're being disciplined or punished. It just means that there's a greater reward, I think, for us to go through it and to persevere. And the strength that we gain at the end would not have been gained unless we had gone through the difficulty that, you know, we've had to go through. So we can expect difficulties. And if, you know, if we expect to be risen with Yahshua, we'll have to suffer as he did in many respects. Sometimes that's being persecuted as he was persecuted. And, you know, if that's the case, then so be it. 1 Corinthians 10:24, let no one seek his own good, but that of his neighbor. Okay, seek your neighbor's good. Well, what is better than that? Galatians 6 and verse 10. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and, or maybe we could put in there, but, especially to those who are of the household of faith. So we're to seek our brother's good. We're to seek the edification, the building up, the encouragement of the body of Messiah. And, you know, we struggle, we labor. We also have responsibilities to do these things. And it's not all just, you know, do this thing over here and neglect this. No, we're to try to, you know, whatever Yahweh gives us to do, we're to do it with all of our strength and all of our might and heart. But we do what we can, and we do what we're enabled to do because of His Spirit. We're to consider others better than ourselves, and we can consider Yahshua's example, Philippians 2, verses 3 through 8. Make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose, do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind regard one another as more important than yourselves. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourself, which was also in Messiah Yahshua, who, although he existed in the form of Elohim, did not regard equality with Elohim a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant, and being made in the likeness of men, being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a torture stake. Wow. Are we willing to do that? We have to ask ourselves. We should have asked ourselves this when we were first immersed and came into the body. But there are others that are being called out. And they have to consider this for themselves. Are you willing to do what it takes to overcome the world and be prepared to even give up your life as you now know it? To serve and to put yourself in a humble position, washing others' feet. That was not the best, necessarily the best job to have had back in the first century. It was a slave's position. Yahshua humbled himself as a slave to us. And guess what? When he comes, when it comes to the kingdom, what are we told? He's going to be serving us there if we make it, if we overcome to the end. He'll be serving us there. So it's an ongoing thing. John 17, verse 18. As you sent me into the world, I have also sent them into the world. Of course, Yahshua sends us into the world as he was sent into the world. We spoke about the Great Commission last time. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations. Revelation 5, 9 through 10. And they sung a new song, saying, worthy are you to take the book and to break its seals, for you were slain and purchased for Elohim with your blood men from every tribe and tongue and people and nation. You have made them to be a kingdom of priests to our Elohim, and they will reign upon the earth. Yahshua purchased us to make us a kingdom of priests who will partake in the rulership with the King of Kings, actually ruling with him. If we overcome, it's conditional. If we persevere, if we're laboring, if we're serving, if we're submitting ourselves, humbling ourselves to do as he did, if we're growing as Peter, upon your faith, moral excellence, on your moral excellence, self-control, and these type of things, growing, moving forward, being obedient, taking care of and not neglecting the weightier matters of the law, allowing the Spirit of Yahweh to work within your life. That's what it's all about. Yahweh is seeking those that will worship him in his Spirit and in his truth. And the more we find out, the more we understand that this is the kingdom way. It's a way into the kingdom. Of course, Yahshua holds that key. He is the key, the door, and can't go in, can't even approach Yahweh without him. But in him, we will be living as him and doing the things that are pleasing to Yahweh. So we'll be living the lifestyle according to his word. We are called to labor and to serve. We can and we must serve Yahweh, and we must use the tools at our disposal to continue that work. What's at our disposal? Gifts of the Spirit itself. Fruit of the Spirit will abound if we are submitting to him. And sometimes we're pruned, and that's for a purpose. And everything is kind of set in motion for us, and Yahweh is in control. So if we come across a situation, it's right in front of us. It's like what did Moses tell the people? Essentially, Yahweh. What did Yahweh tell the people? Be still. When they came up to the water, and they had the army behind them coming out of Egypt. What do we do? We should have stayed in Egypt. Now we're brought out here to die like dogs. That's what they were essentially saying. And they were told to be silent and witness the salvation of Yahweh. And it's a parallel to what's coming. We're going to see some tough times. We're going to most likely, maybe it won't be in our lifetime, but it seems like we can certainly see a time when, even in this country, we could be between a rock and a hard place. And hopefully we'll be able to stand firm and persevere and speak when we're able to and do those things. Because it talks about in Matthew 24 about being taken, dragged even before government officials. And it says we'll be given the words to speak anything that we're to be speaking to them. And I think we've got a lot to say. I think there's some things that we can tell them. But it's going to ultimately be up to Yahweh what we're led to say. But we can and we must serve each other in Yahshua the Messiah. We can be helpful to our neighbors and set a good example for them. We can live by Yahweh's word and labor and serve with the strength that Yahweh provides. Why does Yahweh allow us to look into the stars and have an understanding that we have? Does it humble us? We are so small. Do we realize that He has set the example of being a servant who Himself has labored for us? He's building a family. And, Yahshua said Himself that He's going away to prepare a mansion that will be remarkable. It will have rooms and different things, a spiritual house. Next time we think about creation and how Yahweh has taken the time to serve us by placing us on this privileged planet, consider how we've been called to labor and serve. And let's consider how we can even do more. We'll leave with this scripture that we started out with. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Master, knowing that your toil is not in vain in the Master. Hallelujah.